This is the Valley Outdoor Show, and we are glad to have you guys with us. We have a full complement in the house tonight. We have Don Cleaver.
I'm here.
Ava.
Hello.
And myself, Eric. And we are going to have a good time. We've got some cool stories coming up. We have a gentleman joining us, Mr. Charlie Cordell. And he is going to talk a little bit about a neat story that he has regarding a very large buck that he chased. I think
for
some
a long
of us
time.
Have done that for a long time. Yeah. And a little bit of what's going on in Montana, kind of a bighorn story that you're not going to believe, that and more when we return.
For the angler that has everything, or just thinks everything, grace your palm with the feel of a custom fishing rod made to your specs from Patriot Custom Rods. It will soon become a cherished tool in your hand, providing the sensitivity and feel you have long dreamed of. Patriot Custom Rods are specially designed to your species of fishing, rod weight, colors, grip type, and length. Treat yourself or someone else to a Patriot Custom Rod. Find us on thevalleyoutdoors.com.
Ashkenam Resort on Ash River in northern Minnesota is a destination you're looking for. Ashkenam offers everything for the angler or family vacation with access to Lake Cabotogama, Namekin Lake, and the gateway to Voyageurs National Park. Thousands of acres of clean, refreshing water all available to you. This is your destination for your next fishing trip or family vacation. Check us out on thevalleyoutdoors.com. Do I need to say walleyes, northern pike, and crappies?
Oh, it's good to be here. Don?
Yes, you know, I love this time of the year. Lots of preparation for the new season coming up.
You can walk outside. You don't have to wear a jacket on occasion.
There's even...
Depending, of course, on where you're at. But right. I think pretty much across the Midwest, it's been nice to go out and wander.
Well, I mean, it's just those things that happen when spring arrives. You know, I just recently saw the first... picture somebody put on online of a bluebird showing up in our area, at least.
Well, the other
eagles are plentiful around our area anyway.
And there was a big news story that kind of went viral. I guess.
Yep.
One of the guys I work with, Shannon Harrell.
Yep.
He saw one of the pictures and he called the news station and said, "Hey, you need to check this out. This photographer, Mr. Alms."
Yep.
Tim Alms is a very good photographer,
yep.
As well as Kip Ernie.
Kip
Those
Ernie,
two guys
yep.
are out there every morning, well, not every morning, but close to it,
yep.
taking amazing pictures. And they said, you know what, that's a great story, and we're going to do that. So they actually went down to the Eagle Center in Wabasha and then came back up and did a bunch of photos, talked to Tim, and made a great story of it. So thanks to Shannon.
We'll see if we can get that photo on our Facebook page. You can and our website maybe, but it's just simply a photo across a small bay just right in town here. There must be 100 bald eagles.
There's at least
sitting in the trees right there.
They are fun to watch though,
and they're very abundant in our area because we have open water throughout the winter.
Have you ever watched them?
Oh yeah.
What's interesting is the young of the year versus the immature. The mature is obviously the white head.
Right.
The immature is more of a brown speckled with white wings, right? Well, the younger ones will go down and grab the shad that they're very plentiful. Shad is a small, probably 3 or 4 inch bait fish.
Right.
They'll go down there and pull a bunch of them on the ice and start eating. Right up until the fact that one of the bald eagles matures finds that he's got some on the ice and then he just sweeps right down and scares them off and has himself a little dinner.
Yeah. I mean, it's but they'll take larger fish,
they will.
Up to, say, 16, 18 inches at
Smart
least.
Smart birds, though.
And they'll take
somebody else do the fishing for you to come in and then eat.
Yep.
That's the way that works, apparently. But cool stuff.
Yep.
Kind of fun. And I think when you look at this time of year, it's a short window. I think it's like roughly a week and a half that they have this intense group, and then they start to thin out relatively rapidly after that, maybe 2 weeks, but it's a short window.
Well, it breaks up when the ice breaks up and you know, the rest of in our case the Mississippi River. I mean, we have got about 7 miles here that's open water, and when Lake Pepin downstream opens up, then they start heading north.
Pushing.
Yep.
Pushing big time. So kind of a cool thing. The other thing I thought was fun, just as a spreading the love across the board, fishing season starting.
Yep.
And, of course, there's been a lot of followers chasing the or watching the Bassmaster Classic for this year. And it was won by Jason Christie. It's his first Bassmaster Classic victory. He got a three-day total of 54 pounds of bass, which is fantastic. It got him a first-place victory of $300,000 cash prize, bringing him to a career total of over $1.5 million. And congrats to him. And I think it's kind of fun when, if you ever watch it and get into watching it, the intensity is just crazy because the level of that classic, it's the most sought after win in bass fishing. In fact, in angling.
Probably period. In angling, yes.
In angling, period. And to get that, you're going against the best of the best, and it's pretty amazing, I will say that. So, kind of fun. Congrats to Jason Christie. And switching gears quick, you know the person I like to talk about. Who's that?
Probably Michaela.
Michaela Schifrin.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go into detail, Don.
Okay, let's not.
But let's not. Ava, come on. You got to help me here.
All right, let's go.
As far as
come
an athlete, we're working
let's
on
go.
It.
Moving on.
Michaela Schifrin, she actually won the overall World Cup title and recovered from her errors at the Olympics. So congrats to her. That was pretty amazing. And it is the fourth time that she's done it, and no one else has done it quite that way. So pretty cool in the world of athletics, and glad to see she came back. A lot of emotional issues that she had trying to get through what we would call the Olympics in general. So moving to more local / non-local river fishing, it's picking up. Water temperature starting to pick up, and I think across the region, what you're finding, and the guys that I've talked to, it's really starting to go fast. With the consistent warm weather, the fish are starting to stack up, and we're getting some good-sized fish. They're starting to pull into the rivers. The bigger saugers are there. They're not all the way up in the system yet. They're kind of staggered and staged at certain points, but they're hanging out. So don't be afraid to go out and stretch your wings when it comes down to fishing the rivers. Don't expect it's just going to be one spot. If you're not catching them, mix it up. Go downstream and play around with that, because it's also finesse this time.
Yep, I've actually heard of some good fishing going on right now in our area.
Yep. And again, I think one of the biggest things, make sure that you're – jigging usually takes place, everybody's, you know, lift and drop. Keep in mind, early spring when the water's cold, many times those fish just want to see it passing by, drifting downstream. Or the same thing as if you're pulling slowly upstream. You don't have to go very fast, and you can get some absolutely fantastic fishing. And it's just a matter of letting them know, finding out what the fish want. They'll tell you, right?
Oh, yeah.
Either you have a full box of fish or nothing. Goose egg.
I've been on both ends of that.
Exactly. I know that we both know the feeling. We both know the feeling. Well, hey, stay tuned. We have Charlie Cardell coming up. It's a great story about a pretty good-sized deer and how he got it. Coming right up. Well, welcome back, everybody. We'd like to have you check us out on Don.
On thevalleyoutdoors.com.
And on Facebook. Like us, please. And I heard the story, Don. You picked out the story, and you saw the story about Charlie Ware.
Actually, I had a friend of mine that had tipped me off. I was having a beer one night, and he says, "Did you hear about this situation?" And I said, "No." So we were able to get Charlie to give us a call, and here we are.
Fantastic. Well, joining us is Charlie Cardell. Charlie, good to have you with us.
Hey, thanks, guys. It's good to be here.
And you know, you're safely parked on the side of the road now, right?
I am. Yep, correct.
Perfect. Charlie, you know, obviously people that have a desire to get a bigger a deer with a bigger rack on it, they are really, what would you call it, Don? addicted, basically. I mean, you get to the point where you're obsessed. Obsessed is probably part of the word for it. How did you start doing the process? I mean, what brought you into this single deer that you ended up chasing?
Well, you know, there's a lot of things that contributed to it. I know for sure, and my teachers are going to love to hear this, but back when I was in high school, we had computers my last couple years of high school, and during study hall, I would always watch, the show is called Midwest Whitetail, and basically that show, what they did was the host, Bill Winky, he had his farm, and basically he was filmed the whole time, and he would more or less all fall film his story going after one deer. And that kind of created, watching that repeatedly and learning stuff from him, kind of created the drive for me, I guess, to try and create the history and build the story with one specific deer. And it took me a few years to kind of to get into it with the help of trail cameras and you know, friends and stuff like that, advising me on what to do and how to do it and stay clean and stay out and not push this one particular deer off the property. You know, that's kind of how it got started, was that way, and with friends pushing me. We, you know, when we started getting pictures of the deer, we were just young. I was only 18 or 19 when I first started hunting the deer. Would be 19, I guess, but yeah, it was really my first opportunity to go after one specific deer, and it was exciting. I didn't know starting it what it was going to turn into, and how I guess the word is obsessed, how obsessed I was going to get with that animal, and a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into it. And I know my girlfriend can definitely say there's a lot of tears, more than blood necessarily, but a lot of sweat put into it. But it was stressful, but definitely worth it, and way more satisfying, I guess, and rewarding for me, having the way it worked out after all the years of going after him. So yeah.
So the story is,
if that answers your question.
Yeah, absolutely. And the story is, you went after this same, you were going for the same deer. How many years mm-hmm. that you're looking for that deer?
So,
chasing it.
So I'd say I hunted him for 4 years, I knew of him for five. So the first year I didn't really, you know, I knew of him and knew he was young and didn't pay a lot of attention, had other more mature bucks I was pursuing, but yeah, hunted him for four, knew of him for five, we'll say.
Right. And
yeah,
what was it that started the obsession with that particular deer? You know, there's something that's going to tie you into one deer, and then the next thing you know, it's like, this is something, I've got to get this deer. What was really the draw?
Right. I would say is his antlers definitely are the first attention grabber, or were for me. The property that I hunt at that time didn't have a lot of the bigger bucks, you know, that I could see on camera. He was the definite, biggest one in the area. So that obviously, was the initial draw, but then also the fact that he was the most consistent buck I had on camera over all these years. I mean, he definitely lived in the property or stayed within the property for almost all of the year, and then maybe, you know, during rut time would venture out a little bit. I'd hear of neighbors that were getting pictures of them, but really I kind of keep surveillance on the neighbors and stuff and see what everybody's seeing, and he stayed right in there. So I knew at some point, you know, if I did everything right, that it could hopefully come together. I did not expect it to take as long as it did, or be as stressful and everything that it was, but it worked out, I guess.
So, Charlie, I was going to ask, how big of a area was this? And there's something really unique about this whole story. We haven't got to that yet. But as far as the area you're in, this is in southeastern Minnesota, for those in the other parts of the country. But how big of an area were you hunting to find this deer?
Right, yeah. No, so the property that I hunt is 190 acres, and there was, I would say, the west side of the farm and the east side of the farm, I did not get pictures of this deer. I was getting him just in the central part of the farm, which is, I'd say probably 50 or 60 acres of almost solid timber. And that seemed like that was his area where he hung out. And yeah, I didn't get them on the east side of the farm hardly at all, you know, maybe during rut time, like I said before, and same with the west. And to the north, across the road is actually where the neighbors would get pictures of them, you know, a handful of times, but not very often. So yeah, he was not covering much area.
So you hunted him for 4 years. Can you kind of walk us through the years and how it happened and what happened?
Yeah. So I'll start with, you know, the first year I got him on camera a handful of times. Before I started pursuing him, we'll say the first of 5 years, I'll start there. He was a mediocre type 10-pointer. I mean, I believe at that point he was 2 or potentially 3 years old. I'm chasing or trying to chase 4 or 5 year old more mature deer. It's harder in different areas, you know, more pressured areas, but that's what I was trying to pursue. So I watched him, but didn't expect a whole lot, you know, wasn't going to go for him too much. So that year kind of came and went, didn't pay much of attention. The next year I had a deer that was him, but I didn't necessarily know it right at the beginning of the year, when he was growing in velvet and I was getting pictures of him, but I was like, this deer is probably going to get my attention the whole year because he was starting to shape into a really, you know, a dandy. At that point I had never killed a buck. So, you know, a big buck, he was probably, I would say in the mid to upper 140s class, inches wise at that point. And he was, you know, everything I kind of wanted and he was the biggest deer on the farm that year. So it was my real starting point there of trying to hunt him. And started there, chased him all through the fall, a lot of pictures of him. He was very nocturnal in that year. Maybe a couple times here or there I'd get pictures of him. And then one time I was actually had my little 12-year-old cousin with me that year. And we were sitting in a ground blind over a cut cornfield, just like you do. And I actually had him out. And the buck came out couple hundred yards maybe away and walked straight away from us, and I only was on him for maybe 4 or 5 seconds with my binoculars to know it was him, and he went back in the woods and never seen him again. So that's the one actual encounter where I seen him with my own eyes the first year that I was hunting him. So he was kind of, I knew he was there, but he was MIA in a way. You know, he was there on cameras and stuff, but I didn't know where he was, and I couldn't catch up with him. So
call him Sasquatch, right?
Yeah,
the one that's on camera, but nobody ever really sees him.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
So you went and chased him that length of time, and you were lucky because you were able to also find what he got rid of every year, right?
Right. So actually, that year where I was just saying, he went into feeding, you know, into the winter where they herd back up and eat and everything. And I knew he was still there. He wasn't super consistent. I run cameras all year long. So I knew he was around still, but he wasn't super consistent. And when I stopped getting pictures of him with his horns on or his antlers on, and he dropped them about the end of February, I would say the last week of February, I started putting the miles on all within this one property, 190 acres. I could be a little off, but I think 9 or 10 miles within this one property, just zigzagging it, looking for his shed that year. And, you know, when you put on all that time and try to walk every square inch of the property and you don't find him, I guess my conclusion is that he dropped him on someone else's or somewhere else. And they're just going to either somebody else picked him up on a neighboring property and is knowing him and doesn't know how the deer ended up or didn't know anything about it, or the mice and squirrels are eating them down. Who knows? But so that's right. The first year that I didn't find a shed that year.
But you did find them years 2, 3, and 4, though, correct?
Yeah. So it'd be years. So that year I did not. Year two I found them, both of them. The third year I found the one, and actually the neighbor found the other one. We're actually kind of in negotiations on if I'm going to end up with it or not. I'm holding on to it right now. I've had it for the last month, but it was the biggest shed he ever found, and he doesn't want to give it up. But we kind of had an agreement back last winter, actually, before I ended up killing the deer, that, you know, if I got him, I'd love to have that other shed just to put them all together. But so I'll say, yeah, we found the year yeah. two and year three sheds, both sides off of them. So, yeah.
And then this last year,
you found it? Yeah, so this last fall, I put cameras out again, started checking cameras in. I waited longer than I typically do. I waited till I think the last week of August, and I checked him, and he was everywhere on the property, like way more than he ever had, you know, in the couple years before. It was pretty exciting to see him, and he had grown. What's that?
How many cameras did you have out on that property?
I would say on that camera, on that property, I run probably 9 or 10 cameras.
Okay.
I have it pretty littered in yeah. there with them, but you never know. Sometimes I've had deer where I've sat in a tree stand and you watch them walk behind the tree that your camera's on and don't even know what's going on. So I try to keep it covered pretty good. So I try and catch everything as much as I can.
So you finally did take the deer?
Yeah. Yeah, so that November 7th, he came out actually into this big block of timber that I was talking about before, and I watched him. He was with a doe, and he actually got my wind and started pushing the doe the other way. So I jumped out of my tree since I had a gun tag, and I was gun hunting at that point. I ran all the way to the north side of the property, ran along the line fence to the west line fence, and ran back down, and I actually caught him pushing that doe out of the backside of the bedding area into the neighboring property, and he pushed the doe right to, he's about 45 yards from me, and shot him with the gun and hit him perfect, and he ran back in, and the rest is history, I guess, as they say.
Success. So how big a rack did you yeah. end up with, and then we have to wrap, I think.
What was that?
What did he measure out at?
So he ended up being 165 4/8 gross, and it was, I think, 149 and some change net. He just missed the typical boon to go in the record book by like eighths of an inch.
Oh no!
But I got to tell you, 13-point deer is a trophy, no matter
what.
Yeah, and combined with having the racks, that the sheds that you have, that's a heck of a story. I got to tell you, Charlie, pretty doggone cool.
Yeah.
Yep.
Pretty darn cool.
It was pretty cool. Pretty, you know, humbling, I guess, in a way, for it all to work out in the end. And to put the story of, I called him BT because he was a Big Ten the first year. So putting the story of BT to rest was pretty cool and pretty, you know, it was a pretty emotional experience for me to really be able to put that all together and all the years of history. So
fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, I hope it works out for you to get all the sheds and get them mounted, and that'll make a pretty cool display.
Remember, hot dish works in exchange for sheds.
Does it?
That's what I hear. I don't know for sure.
I was thinking Ben Franklin's is what I was trying.
Well, that Benjamin's work too. Benjamin's yep. work too for the yeah. big BT. Yep. All right, Charlie, thank yep. you so much. What a great story. And we will be right back with more Valley Outdoors. Eric Olson here, professional walleye tour champion, avid outdoorsman, and host of the Valley Outdoors radio show. Aquatic invasive species, or AIS, threatens not only our rivers and lakes here, but everywhere we boat. They come in many forms, and they love to hitch a ride to the next body of water on your boat or trailer. Join me to stop the spread of AIS by cleaning all weeds and aquatic material from your trailer before leaving the launch ramp. Drain live wells and clean areas that don't drain completely. Plus, don't forget to pull the plug. Clean, drain, dry. Together we can make a difference. It's always fun to have somebody like, you know, having a long background story, and the mount that he's going to put together for that deer should be amazing.
Mm-hmm.
That should be kind of fun. Speaking of some mounts that aren't going to happen, Don, three cougars were killed after decimating a Montana bighorn herd. This is pretty crazy. Three now dead cougars found their way into Flathead Lake's Wild Horse Island. Okay, so this is the reason this is bizarre. They hunted down the big sheep on that herd and brought it down to as few as 35 of the prized Rocky Mountain ungulates. You know what an ungulate is, right?
Nope.
It's a hoofed creature.
Oh, okay.
There you go. Although the after an initial sum, it's the lowest count on the isle in at least 20 years, according to Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. 130 sheep were tallied on the island in 2019. A couple dozen were later removed in the department to help reestablish a herd in southwestern Montana. So it's a source for pure bighorn. So they use it to, they pull, after a couple of years, they can pull a group and pull it because it is a pure herd, because you don't have any, it's an island, right? So, three adult mountain lions, which either swam to the island or accessed the shores via an ice bridge during recent winters, appear to have killed 70-some valuable bighorns. Is that?
Wow.
Yeah. The issue really comes down to exactly that. They shot all three of them and identified that those were the ones. What they're going to have to look at now is actually adding to them. And in 2019, the Flathead Lake nearly froze over for the first time. And I think that's possibly when they gained access, as they typically don't have swimming in it. So, but yeah, scary thought, and how much it can be devastating to a herd in a very short period of time. So we got to keep our eye on the cougar thing and keep that question. So for me, Eric, Don, Ava, we are the Valley Outdoors, and we are super glad you guys joined us today. Join us next week. It'll be awesome. See ya.